You're listening to Backstage at Lyric, the podcast that takes you behind the scenes at Lyric Opera of Chicago. Backstage at Lyric features in-depth interviews with the singers, conductors, and creative talents at one of the world's great opera companies. For additional podcast interviews, subscribe to our RSS feed or visit us online at lyricopera.org.
Mezzo-soprano Petra Lang is backstage at Lyric.
Frankly, I have to say, as Prangenen, for me the key point of the role, you are always reacting. It's not that you are doing the action by yourself. You have to react to Isolde, and you have to make the relationship work. This is what I think is the work every singer of a Prangene has to do, and you have to adjust your power to the power of every Isolde you are faced to.
Thank you for downloading this episode of Backstage at Lyric. I'm Roger Pines. I have the pleasure of speaking to one of Germany's most outstanding singers, mezzo-soprano Petra Lang. She's making her Lyric opera debut in a role she's made her own all over the world, Brangäne in Wagner's Tristan und Isolde. Before we play the interview, here's a brief synopsis of the opera. The knight Tristan kills Morold, fiancé of the Irish princess Isolde. As King Mark is nephew, Tristan is asked to escort Isolde by ship from Ireland to Cornwall, where Mark is going to marry her. While still on board ship, Isolde asks her maid, Brangäne, to prepare a death potion for Tristan, but the maid substitutes a love potion instead. Both Tristan and Isolde drink it and fall passionately in love. At night, with Marcus supposedly off hunting, Tristan and Isolde yield to their passion. The two of them are caught by Marca and the treacherous courtier Melot, who mortally wounds Tristan. Later, Isolde travels to Tristan's birthplace, Cariol, where he's been delirious in his longing to see her once more. Just as she arrives, he dies. A second ship brings Marca, ready to forgive Isolde and unite her with Tristan, but it's too late. Imagining her lover alive again, Isolde turns serene and, transfigured, sinks onto the body of Tristan. Now, onto the interview with mezzo-soprano Petra Lang. I hope you enjoy it. I'm here with Petra Lang, who is making her Lyric opera debut in the role of Brangäne in Tristan und Isolde. And I'm curious as to whether you grew up listening to this music. When did you hear it? The first time? Were you a child or were you a teenager?
Frankly, I have to say that my father was working in the technical department of Frankfurt Opera. And so I had the chance to go and watch opera when I was very, very, very young. And it even at home, it was for me much more interesting to listening to the operatic recordings they have got than to listening to the fairy tales that I was presented. This was just, it was more fun to listen to. For example, we had a Flying Dutchman with Hans Hotter, and there was the famous Tannhäuser from Bayreuth with Anja Silja, and I think Grace Bunbury was singing the Venus.
And you were listening to this when you were 4 or 5 years old?
Something like that. That was much more fun.
What was your... Do you remember what your initial response to Tristan und Isolde was?
My first Tristan, frankly, this I have to say, there was a production in Frankfurt, a very, very ugly production and they have had a set of plexiglass, and you could see the dust. There was always dust on this set because of the static. I don't know how to say it in English. There was a Ladung, Aufladung. I don't know how to say it with this plastic set, and you could see the dust coming from everywhere. And I remember Spas Vankov singing Tristan there, which was very, very, very impressive. But I have had no clue what this opera was about. It was only that it was very, very long. That was maybe when I was 12 or something like that.
We'll talk about your own role of Brangaena in a moment, but what is it about this opera in general that you think makes it such a thrilling experience for the audience and keeps audiences coming back to it? I know so many people have heard live Tristan's maybe 20 or 30 times because it's so thrilling to them. What makes it so, do you think?
I think it's the music. The music is like is putting you on drugs. I think this is just what happens. This is the impression I've always had with most of the late Wagner or later Wagner, that it's like a drug. Once you have used to get it, you need it.
Do you have a favorite moment in this music, whether it's sung by your character or any other character, that sort of sums up everything that you love about Tristan and Isolde?
No, with Tristan, I must say, frankly, that there's nothing, not a special moment.
It's all special.
I love the whole opera.
On stage, have you ever found yourself so overwhelmed by the music that you can't sing? Because you're so emotionally caught up in it?
Not with Tristan. No, because I must say I'm a professional. And I'm doing this job quite for a while. And I really try... The audience, they have to be overwhelmed. They have to be in tears, but not I'm as a singer. I try to do all this emotional work. This is for me the homework. I have to do it before I go on stage, even before I do the first musical rehearsal with the conductor. I have to know in which emotional situation the character is and have to put me into that emotional situation, but not letting me overwhelming. Let me be overwhelmed by my emotions, because I still have to sing.
Of course. Have you added up the number of opera houses where you've done Brangaena? I know you've done 10 or more.
More than 100 times I've sung this.
Wow. Prior to this one, was there a production that did mean the most to you?
Yeah, it was after having done so many different Tristan and Isolde productions, the one who for me was the most important and till now I have to say is the most roundest and production was the Willy Decker production from Leipzig, which I have done in Antwerp, where there was nothing on stage, just a room and a little boat and you... but.
So you had to create it yourself. You had to create the character yourself. You know, you haven't been rehearsing this production very long,
no.
The one in Chicago, but do you have a sense of what it's going to be like visually?
I must say, at the moment, after a day, I have had one good day. We are just organizing traffic at the moment, which is just normal at the beginning.
I imagine that with so many Tristan productions behind you, a few of them were probably pretty outrageous as far as scenery and costumes.
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever had to wear anything just so completely off the wall as Brangaena?
Oh, for example, I remember a production in Vienna where they gave me a hat, and with that hat I couldn't hear anything when I was singing, and I could hear me singing with an echo.
And
it was just more than difficult. But I must say, after the opening night reading this in many reviews, then the director of the Wiener Staatsoper released me from wearing that hat.
What drew you to the role of Brangaena in the first place? What and has kept your interest going over so many performances?
Oh, it's just part of the repertoire.
People expect you to sing.
It's just as simple as it is. It's a mezzo repertoire role, and it's part of the repertoire, and you just then do it.
Do you think of her more? Have you been asked to play it both as a maid to Isolde and as more of a companion to Isolde, or sort of sister type? Do people view her differently?
Yeah. This is what it is. It's you can do it as a maid or as a sister type. This works perfectly. What for me didn't work was when they asked me, and this happened twice, that she is I called her the ugly aunt. So that she is looks jealously at Isolde and is not behaving very nice to Isolde. And this, it's not about the role, and it's not written in the, not written in the score, and it's not in the book, but some directors just thought, oh, maybe that would give a good touch to it.
It seems such a betrayal of the music, certainly.
Yeah.
How old do you like to play her?
If we follow, there's one letter by Wieland Wagner where he explains to Christa Ludwig, who was not very, I think she didn't like the role, singing the role very much at the beginning, and she sang it in Bayreuth. And Wieland Wagner explains her that Pangene is a young woman, younger than Isolde, with no experience at all. And for me, this makes absolutely sense, because this reflects her behavior. It reflects why she is doing what, and she is, I must say, she's always late because there is no experience. She has no clue what to do with that. She finds herself in a situation where she can't find a solution what to do properly. Mm. And everything she does is wrong, and it's too late at the at the very end.
You have a big solo moment in Act Two, which is the warning. And can you tell us, first of all, what's going on in that moment?
It's just the two lovers. They're having a very good time, I think. And Prangene is put above on the tower to watch, and to watch if King Marko and his followers and the hunters, if they're coming back. And she just sits there, and I have the feeling that she is just sitting above there and screaming the whole time, and because she can't cope with the situation.
Have you done it both on stage and off stage, the warning? What do you prefer?
For me, for the warning, the most important thing is to hear the orchestra properly. Absolutely. This is because it's very, very difficult to sing. These are very, very long phrases, and it just sits in the passaggio of the voice where you have to change, and this is which makes it a little bit tricky. That means where you have to be very, very careful and hear the orchestra properly.
So the further back you are, the further upstage you are, the harder it is, I would think.
No, it depends on I think it depends on what the conductor wishes, how much of the voice the conductor wishes to hear, and most of the time when you sing this backstage, then they use a microphone.
Right.
And, okay, it's just the voice, you hear the voice via the loudspeaker. If you prefer this, then it's your taste.
Now, at the end of the opera, Tristan and Isolde are both dead, and what do you think happens to Brangaena? We have no sense of what the rest of her life is going to be. Do you think she just goes off to a convent and spends the rest of her life there?
Maybe that, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It's so important that you and whoever is playing Isolde opposite you have a great rapport on the stage. Now, here in Chicago, you're working with Deborah Voigt, and you were actually her first Brangaena, weren't you, in Vienna a few years ago. Have there been other situations where you've actually done two or even three productions with the same Isolde? So, in Debbie's case, can you bring to this production that we're doing in Chicago a lot of the same sort of interaction that you established in Vienna? Can you carry it over?
Frankly, I have to say, as Prangene, you always, this is the for me, the key point of the role, you are always reacting. It's not that you are doing the action by yourself. You have to react to Isolde, and you have to make the relationship work. This is what I think is the work every singer of a Prangaena has to do, and you have to adjust your power to the power of every Isolde you are faced to.
Right.
So, and I try, even Debbie, now she has changed since we have done this before. And I think I have the impression now she's doing it much more in a much more different way. So it will be different than as we have done it in Vienna.
Now, you are a high mezzo. Have you ever toyed with the idea of singing Isolde yourself?
No. I've studied the role. Frankly, I have to say this, but I think this is just, it's a, thank God there are Fächer in the singing world. That means
categories.
Categories. And Isolde, I think this is just a role that belongs to the hochdramatische Sopran. That means it's the Elektra. It's
heavy dramatic.
It's the Brünnhilden.
Yes.
It's maybe Turandot.
That kind of
but
voice.
That Färbers Frau.
Right.
That kind of voice. And I think for the mainstream, as a singer, you should stay with your,
what nature meant you to sing.
Absolutely.
Yes. Now, you have this wonderful musical background. I mean, you started out as a violinist, and you played chamber music, and you've done some conducting. So how does all of that experience sort of kick in when you learn a piece that's as challenging musically as Tristan or some of the other pieces that you've sung, like Bartók's Bluebeard's Castle, for example? Doesn't it give you a huge advantage over your colleagues, this kind of background that you have?
I never looked at it like that way. It just helps me studying a role. And I really, when I study a new repertoire, I really, first of all, I study it musically and try really to be prepared absolutely properly musically. And then I look at all the, at the, also at the, at the role, as an actor would approach a role. So it's the music study or the violin study background really helps. Also feeling the orchestra. Once you've played in an orchestra, you know, you have a different approach of singing. It's not, oh, I'm the singer, I'm the big soloist. No, you really try to sometimes it's necessary to meld with the orchestra.
I should think that your relationships with conductors must be very much more sort of detailed than what a lot of other singers would experience, just because you do have this awareness of what orchestration is about that another singer might not. I mean, do you find that?
Frankly, I've never thought about this. I'm just doing my job as good as I can.
Now, you went to a conservatory, right?
Yeah.
How did you then get into the opera business? Did you start it out in a young artist program? Or?
I started in Munich at the Bayerische Staatsoper. And there, at that time, they had a studio. It's some kind like a young artist program. And I joined them for 1 year, and then
And you sang very small roles.
Oh, yeah.
What did that experience teach you? I mean, did you like the second maid or the whatever it was that you were singing?
I started as one of the flower maidens in Le Nozze di Figaro. No, not flower maidens. The maidens of
the peasant girls.
The peasant girls in Le Nozze di Figaro.
Yes.
And then at one day I was the mother of Gwyneth Jones singing Butterfly.
Oh, wow.
And that was just
two lines, right?
Something like that. Okami, okami.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
And you moved on to larger opportunities in probably a smaller house.
Smaller houses.
Yes.
Yeah. And this is just, I think, the way, the path a young singer should go to develop the voice, go to smaller places, sing their smaller roles and also bigger roles and try them out there. I think this is very, very helpful for a young singer.
Was there a particular moment that you consider a sort of international breakthrough that took you sort of to the next level?
I think it was when I jumped in for Tristan's second act in Geneva in 97, when Ben Heppner was singing his first second act, Tristan, and everybody was there. And this was just, I think, a big chance.
And then you had a wonderful experience, I think, at Covent Garden with Haitink.
Yeah, with Haitink.
Yes.
Few wonderful experience.
Yeah.
And the Trojans with Colin Davis in London. Yeah,
because that's, I think, where I first read about you with the Trojans, which was very exciting for you.
That was just that one year with the Tristan. First, my first Kundry at the Royal Albert Hall with Sir Simon Rattle, then the Tristan with Bernard Haitink, and then the Les Troyens with Colin Davis.
That's amazing.
In 2000. Just all in one half year.
You've done this wonderful repertoire, very varied repertoire, and you work with all the best conductors, and you're working in all the best houses. Do you have goals for the future with so much repertoire that you've already been able to do in these wonderful circumstances? Are there particular ambitions that you're looking at for like the next 5 years or so?
I just think that I try to keep the repertoire I'm singing at the moment. That means the Kundry or Trut, the heavier Wagner repertoire.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just looking what's going to happen.
And you're also balancing all of this with recital work, which I know is very important to you.
Absolutely.
Do you have any sense of, I mean, having worked in major American houses, but also all over Europe, are there basic differences, do you think, between the way we produce opera in the United States versus the way they do in Germany? When you look at a house like Lyric Opera or a house like, you know, the major German houses that you've sung in, do we all sort of handle things the same way?
I think in Germany, or in especially in Germany, it's not all over Europe, it's the same, but all, let's say in the German-speaking countries, the director is the big guy number one. And this is, I think, the difference to here. And sometimes it's not, I must say, frankly, it's in some case it's not to the best. When you see very, very strange productions, as I told you, the one where Prangene, they made Prangene looking with jealous... jealous looking at Isolde, which is just ridiculous.
Yes.
And there are more cases, wilder cases. And I think this is just, you should follow more the music.
Absolutely.
And I think this is maybe the difference to Europe, where there is enough money still given by the government, and that this kind of work is just possible.
Now, to return finally to Tristan und Isolde, is there anything that you would like to say to our listeners who would be experiencing this opera for the first time, you know, what they can look forward to and what you hope will sort of stay with them from the experience?
I think just go, listen, and let the music talk to you.
Great. Thank you. Have a wonderful time in Chicago, and all the best for Tristan und Isolde. Thank you, Pedro.
You've been listening to Backstage at Lyric, the podcast that takes you behind the curtain at Lyric Opera of Chicago. For additional interactive content and to order tickets, visit us online at lyricopera.org.